spoiler cast, yes. Because we're going to be talking about the ending, so there will be spoilers. My name is Alexandra. I am a commentaries editor on FPS. And I am a student at the Games Institute.
I am Emma Vossen. I am the new editor-in-chief of First Person Scholar, and I think that's actually the first time I've said that, like, out loud. Weird. Yeah, Rob.
Hi, I'm Rob. I'm an editor at First Person Scholar as well. You can find me on Twitter at RobotParking. Yeah, and I'm here to talk about her story.
All right, so I think we picked this game because it just kind of, like Gone Home and all those other types of games, just kind of explode onto the scene because it's so different. But we all had this, like, amazing experience playing this game. One of the first questions I had was, what is the genre of this game? And I don't even think we need to go into, like, is this a game or not? Because no. I think that conversation's happened.
I hate that.
And, yeah,
it's a useless, counterproductive conversation.
Yeah. Right. It's, yeah. So, but I think asking what the genre of this game is very valuable, because I don't think we've seen a game anywhere close to being like this ever.
So, like, are we talking genre, like, form or content?
Well, I guess that's always a question about games, right?
Yeah.
Like, that, there's always that kind of weird divide between the genre.
It's like, it's like, you know, is Resident Evil 5 a third-person shooter, or is it a horror game?
Both.
Yeah. So I guess with this one, content-wise, I don't know, I want to be, like, crime procedural.
So Austin Walker did a really great interview with Sam Barlow, the creator of this game, over at Giant Bomb, shortly after the game came out. And according to the creator himself, it came very much out of the wanting to do something within the crime fiction genre and wanting to play with some of that stuff. The creator's previously worked on Silent Hill Shattered Memories. He was working on that Legacy of Kain game that got kind of summarily canceled. Also created a really great little text game called Isle. And I think he's always been, like, a lot of his stuff is sort of playing with the idea of delving into, like, you have one story set up, and then it is up to the player to, like, kind of plumb the depths of that stuff. Like, Isle, it's a text adventure game, but you have one choice, and then the game ends. And so the game ends for the character, but it, like, as the player, you're going back to it over and over and over again, and you're finding new things, and you're turning it over in your hand, and it's this one, you just have this one choice that you're making every single time. But you can act on things that you've learned from the outcome of other choices. And I think this is kind of a similar approach to that, where you're kind of pouring more of yourself into the game than it really gives you. So I think it plays with the crime genre a bit, but I don't know. Like, it does it better. It gives you the feeling of actually being a detective more than, I think, any other crime game, aside from maybe Clue.
Yeah, a Clue-like version of this game would be pretty interesting, I think.
Better than the Supernatural Clue, which we played the other day and was terrible.
Oh, dear.
How could it be terrible?
Oh, it was so bad. Like, they kind of changed it up. It wasn't normal Clue.
Well, and I think, like, to me, like, the crime element got so taken out of the game almost after the first go, because they set you up with murder as the first keyword, and you go from there. But, like, almost instantly, I didn't really care about the murder at all.
Yeah. 100%.
I just cared to, like, learn about her. So I thought that, like, I see this as a, like almost like a biography game, you know what I mean? Where you're just slowly learning about the person. Because and there's another game that came out recently where it's I don't remember what it's called, but it's about the women who have been abused, and you talk to each one of them. It recently came out, and it's just kind of like you talk to people and just learn about, like, their trauma, and it's kind of like a group therapy session game. Mm. So I saw a lot of similarities with that, and so, like, while you are trying to find out who did it and whatever, it doesn't seem like that's the emphasis.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say that to me, like, Obviously, this game is nothing like Gone Home, but it's actually exactly like Gone Home in another way. And I think that's because, I mean, I think the thing to me that makes Gone Home so good is that, yeah, you're trying to figure out things about Sam's life and you're, like, going around, but it's also just, like, a listening game. Like, the actual procedure of this game or Gone Home isn't, it's not about you, it's not about what you can find. It's about, like, actually listening to a woman's story. And a lot of the negative reviews about Gone Home were people being like, oh, I'm playing as this protagonist, but I don't find anything about myself, and I don't see myself, and, like, I don't matter. It's like, well, it's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about, in that case, your sister, or in this case, you know, it's about this woman. But people don't like to listen to women talk.
Yeah.
Or like to listen in general. They want to do. And I think that's why we've seen such a great reception for these games, is that for people who, would like to listen, you know, instead of just do in their games, it's like, it's so super, just like, it's so engaging. Like, I could not rip myself away from either of those two games.
Yeah.
But I know other people who, like, sat down and tried to play for half an hour and were like, I'm so bored, and had to walk away.
Yeah. For me, like when I've taught crime fiction, one of my favorite stories to throw, especially early in the course, is A Scandal in Bohemia by Arthur Conan Doyle. One, because Sherlock Holmes is like a recognizable character. People, like almost everyone in your class, is going to know who Sherlock Holmes is and have some idea or some idealized version of him in their minds of how he is and how he's supposed to function. And then when you talk about, you know, crime fiction as like talking about sort of transgressions, and generally at the core of a story is some kind of crime has taken place. So in Scandal Bohemia, the one question I ask is, what crime actually took place? And the only crime that actually did take place was this really important king had a dalliance with a woman who was a singer who was, like, kind of self-reliant, and now he needs to go on and get on with his life and be, like, serious about things and not, you know, deal with this self-directed woman. And he's afraid that she might talk about the fact that they were together, and he just wants to erase that aspect of their life. And so actually Sherlock Holmes is, like, working with this king to sort of erase this woman from his life, this, like, inconvenient woman. But there's no actual crime. Like, there's no legal crime taking place. And that's what I loved about, like, the deeper I got into her story, the more I was like, what crime, like, you know, it destabilizes so many aspects of the narrative that there's no, like, so many parts of it, of the story are, like, kind of implausible or kind of, they seem fabricated or they seem kind of weird, and there's nothing else to corroborate that story. And I think what I like about it is that also, Mary Eagleson wrote, like, about, you know, gendered genres, like, certain types of genres having a very specific expectation of them and stuff like that. And if you look at a lot of detective fiction or crime fiction in general, it's very masculinized. It's very, like, oriented towards, you know, this sort of, the role of men in society. And you know, when you get into, like, hard-boiled stuff and noir and stuff like that, it's sort of men responding to, like, these institutions that had always been around them, and then they're gone.
It's interesting, though, because, like, historically, like, crime fiction's been so masculinized, but, like, the mystery and the mystery novel is, like, I'd say possibly the most feminized genre of fiction, maybe next to fan fiction.
You can't hear me, but I'm nodding.
Yeah. Like, I was talking to my mom, because my mom is, like, a, you know, insane, cozy reader, like those women's mystery novels, and she was telling me this amazing story the other day about how one of her favorite authors is actually a man who writes under a woman's pen name because people won't buy his books if he writes under a man's name, because the genre is just so feminized. So he actually writes under a woman's name, and she was like, I wonder if this is, like, the only man writing under a woman's name to make more money.
Yeah, no kidding.
So yeah, it's really interesting with, like, this being kind of like crime but mystery, how it's kind of like a conflation of, like, hyper masculinized, hyper feminized genres.
Yeah.
Well, and I was recently playing LA Noir for the first time, and I was, one of the things that bothered me the most about this game is there's the homicide section, and every single one of the homicides is this woman who gets, like, brutally murdered and appears naked somehow after, and, like, it just got to be almost a joke about how, like, I'm just like, oh, I already know what the body is going to look like. And the mechanic in the game that allows you to examine the body, you can, like, turn their head sideways and lift up like, he literally gets on their bodies and straddles them, like, and moves their parts around to check for, like, scars or like the wounds and whatever. And yeah, like, it takes place in the 40s. Like, they didn't have proper procedures to just deal with it, but it's kind of really disturbing. And so much of, like, crime games are like that. They're either, like, you're a detective, or you're like some guy who has to deal with his masculinity in whatever fashion, like with Heavy Rain or something like that. And it's just like, you don't get that translation of, like, the mystery genre that you're talking about in games, really.
No, yeah, exactly. I'd say, like, the only place you get it is that, like, because, like, the women's mystery genre is grounded in Nancy Drew. And so, like, the only place you get it is those, like, God, what's the name of the company that makes all those, like, point-and-click mystery games? There's, like, the Nancy Drew ones, and then there's the other ones.
Right,
and
it's like,
you know, you, like, basically, like, come to a room and it's full of junk and you gotta click on things and put it together. And those games are, like, my mom has some of those games, Nancy Drew ones, and every once in a while I'll come home and she'll be like, oh, I'm stuck at this part. And it's, like, they're really difficult. I mean, they're not, there's no agility aspect to it or anything like that, but the puzzles. And so, like, that's, like, a games genre, but, like, not to... Like, I hesitate to say this, but I feel like it's, like, it's been, like, considered, like, a mom genre.
Mm.
Like, these are PC games for moms.
Or things that even, like, could be on a phone or tablet.
Yeah, like, a casual game or whatever. Sorry.
Amazingly, the company that makes the Nancy Drew games is called Her Interactive.
I wanted to be, like, Her Story, and I was like, that's not right. But yeah, Her Interactive, that's how gendered it is.
It's amazing. Like, I'm just staring at their site right now, and they have, like, merchandise, and they have one that's just, like... Keep calm and sleuth on is like one of the it's like the profile
dancers.
I want that mug.
That's amazing. But yeah, so like I feel like that's the equivalent in games, but it's not like if you asked a gamer like, oh, I played all these games, I'm a gamer, they would be like, no, you're not, right? So it like almost like I don't want to say it doesn't count because it does count, but like.
But
you
in
don't
a way
win
that,
it in mainstream games.
But even in the way that it's less of an exploration of the character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's no character mystery pieces. Like, we don't see, like, and they're there. They're in novels. Like, I actually did a whole grad class on women detectives, and there's so many great stories there. But, like, they never end up translating.
Well, with L.A. Noire, like, think about, like, the comparison between L.A. Noire and, like, these sort of Her Interactive games. Or, like, in the Her Interactive games, it's literally, like, you're in an empty house and you're looking at stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas in L.A. Noire, like you're saying, you're like looking at these bodies and you're like lifting up their limbs and stuff. Like, think about the like level of like both of them have voyeurism, but like it is just so totally different.
L.A. Noire has very much like because it's Rockstar, they have the GTA element where you're driving around in your car and you're shooting thugs and so it's still very much like that.
Yeah. The weird thing for me is that. Like, of all the literary genres, I would say that, you know, like, the mystery, the whodunit, is probably the most gamified.
Mm,
like, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, Clue is basically the whodunit.
Yeah.
And like, they, you know, the stories are meticulously constructed to be a game. Like, at a certain point, you are reading the story, but you're solving it. You're playing the detective. And I think, like, I haven't played L.A. Noire, but from what I've seen, any game that talks about, like, sort of police and investigative stuff, like... Sleeping Dogs kind of like toys with that, but the main event is you are throwing people into like fans on top of buildings.
Yes,
but
yes.
Even like on TV, like even if you're watching like a mystery on TV, like still there's an aspect of being like you're trying to figure it out. Like you would never just watch it and be like, I'm just gonna lean back and see what happens.
Yeah,
like yeah.
And recently, we also played the CSI Miami board game. Which is very interesting because it's basically just reading. Like, you just get cards and you read the story and then you get them a little bit out of order sometimes because you have to, like, go to this department and they tell you this information and you have to write everything down. But most of the game is sitting there waiting for your turn because the other person is reading this huge paragraph of, you know, on a card. Mm. And so, like... That, I think, if they did, like, a digital version, like Her Story, that would work. But it's almost like some things actually do work for games by them, you know, chopping all these little facts into, like, 10-second clips or whatever.
Yeah.
Makes it a little bit more digestible.
Yeah. Well, and, I, you know, like, the the artificial, like, limit, you can only see the first five results.
Yes.
Absolutely limited the ability to, like, get the whole sense of the story. Where you're just kind of shuffling things around, and you're trying your best to, like, come at it sideways in a bunch of different ways that you really wouldn't get otherwise. But I, like, kind of appreciated that, even though, obviously, it was kind of like this weird video gamey thing to do.
And now, Emma, you talked about voyeurism, and so do you think that the attractiveness of the actress playing the character, or how she behaved, has anything to do with the popularity or engagement of the game, or even just, like, going along with the genre?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, like, obviously she's gorgeous, or whatever.
Or whatever.
And I'm pretty sure, like, I would be shocked if they said that her being gorgeous did not factor into why they hired her.
Right.
But, I mean, I think that one of the ways that it played into it for me was, like, you know, possibly voyeurism, but more so that, like, so you are looking at these clips, and you are, like, typing in the words, but, like, I also found myself constantly imagining, like, what the detective was like the detective who was physically asking her these questions. And so I felt like the way she was responding to questions and the way the questions she was being asked must be informed by how she was, like, a beautiful white woman.
Right.
Like, and I could not help not thinking about that, like, the whole time. Because, you know, there's moments where you're like, you're a dangerous criminal! But, like, the detective doesn't seem worried at all.
Yeah, like, and she even spins the conversation sometimes and asks the detective questions, like, mm-hmm. oh, I want to see your kids
yeah.
in the wallet, or, like, or she, like, plays in the song, and, like, if he was really doing his job, and, you know, like, he would be like, we don't have time for this, you know, but mm-hmm. I'm assuming it's a he, but I shouldn't.
No,
You know,
I think she does refer to the detective and like as a man. I'm not sure, but I'm almost certain.
Is it weird that it's just like, you know, partially it's like, oh, I shouldn't assume, but you kind of feel like the way that the questions are being answered, like, I feel like they would just be totally different if there was a woman asking the questions.
Yeah, like, especially when you get into, like, if you type in, like, things like sex or whatever, and mm-hmm. she's kind of, like, uncomfortable with that and less open.
Yeah, well, I think the in that interview with Austin, the instructor, or, like, the creator. I work on online courses, so, like, the creator, the subject matter expert, the creator was talking about looking at a lot of interrogation techniques, and one of the approaches is you get people in a room, you just let them talk.
Yeah.
Which is why, like, you know, you lead to that one moment where the really odd moment where, like, suddenly she's just singing the song, and I still have no concept of how they got to this point. Why, like, obviously they had the guitar, they showed it to her, and she said, yeah, that's my guitar. But, like, suddenly she's just playing this, like, very thematically appropriate song.
Yeah.
And so the Dark Id, there's a Twitter user named @TheDarkId, and they took a photo, or, like, took a screenshot of her playing this guitar, and just gave the caption, "Her story, a shocking look into white people's treatment in police interrogation," which was, like, really on point, I think, as well. Like, looking at how kind of white dominated the narratives tend to be in a lot of cases. Like, you know, you have, like, Mosley doing Devil in a Blue Dress and like, that whole section of like, hard-boiled fiction. But, like, I would love to see if there was, like, a sequel to her story, like, have a person of color in there or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because I think it would change the narrative dramatically.
Yeah. Well, and, like, the funny thing about, like, I don't know, like, with the guitar scene is, like, it was, like, kind of ridiculous, like, in the sense that it's just, like, really, is this what you do in an interrogation room? But also kind of ridiculous in the sense that it was, like, almost kind of infantilizing. Like, I couldn't not help but think about, like, the thing where you're, like, I don't know, have, like, the horror movie trope where you have, like, a kid who witnessed the crime and you, like, give them some crayons and you're like, hey, maybe they'll draw it out even though they can't express what they saw.
Right.
And I kind of feel like the hitting her guitar was supposed to kind of be like that. It's like, oh, like, she can sing, and then, you know, she'll just show us, like, I don't know, I felt like that scene was it was super weird.
And it is the longest clip.
Yeah.
The longest clip is the song, and so, like, you think that would be, like, an important moment, because you're asking the player who's already used to sitting with the 10 seconds, and now, okay, you need to watch this for a minute. And so you must really have to pay attention, right? Because it's a minute long. And, I, you know, you see, they give you the timestamp in the corner of the video. Where you're like, okay, 1 minute. Like, this is it. Got my notepad ready. And then mm-hmm. you're just like, oh, this is it.
Yeah. Well, and, like, yeah. I mean, maybe it's, like, as simple as they were like, oh, this actress we hired is also a musician. So at some point she should sing and play the guitar.
Well, I mean, I like that kind of tied into some of the other stuff where, like, it was Eve that was singing at a nightclub. That's how Simon and her met.
Yeah.
I feel like we did have a larger conversation about, like, what, how do we interpret these events and what is really going on here?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's so hard to grow.
She was in a band.
Like, yeah. I have notes and notes and notes, and I still don't know what I'm talking about.
Are we all at the conclusion that we still don't know what happened?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Good. Because, like, I was like, I don't want to show up to this podcast and be the only one who's like, maybe it was this, maybe it was that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the I almost said content creator, creator was also putting it out there that it wouldn't be revealed, the ending, or the interpretation or whatever, which is, I like that kind of stuff. I'm all for that. And so that kind of, I guess, ties into the discussion of, like, games criticism when there is no clear ending. And is it still possible to, criticize a game based on one interpretation?
Are you asking, like, do we need to be satisfied before we criticize something?
Are we satisfied?
Are we satisfied?
No. I did see those, yeah.
Isn't that in the running to, like, what we're going to wind up calling this podcast?
I think we should title it. That was just so, like, I mean, it was just especially lousy when you were playing. Because, I mean, it's true, like, I was tweeting at Rob being like, Rob, read my Facebook messages, I'm not satisfied.
I guess if you weren't aware, like, there's a discussion shortly after the game came out on the Steam forums where one of the members there was saying, like, what to do is the name of the thread. And then they kind of start, like, someone's like, well, you play until you're satisfied. And they're like, well, how do I know when I'm satisfied? And then they're like, how does the game know when I'm satisfied? And at a certain point, you're searching through these clips, you're searching for these words, you're watching these clips, and then you're trying to piece together the story. And at a certain point, a chat message pops up on the screen. It's the game frames as though you're, like, sitting at a police station looking at a computer that someone dug out of archives. And someone sends you a chat message saying, like, oh, hey, you know, are you satisfied? Or are you ready? Like, do you feel like you have enough? And you can say yes or no. And if you say no, it's like, all right, just let me know. And then if you say yes, it'll prompt you with a little bit more of a revealing question. And I almost said no to the second question. But anyways, this person was just like, how do I know when I'm satisfied? And I still don't know that. Like, I actually have watched all the videos. I went through everything, and I still... Like, I guess there's two interpretations, right? There's either Eve and Hannah are separate people,
yeah,
and one was killed by the other,
mm-hmm.
or Eve and Hannah are the same person, and it's someone suffering from a fantastically inaccurate portrayal of, like, dissociative personality disorder.
Mm-hmm. See, and I thought they're twins, and they're both alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's like, I went back and forth, basically, between, I think that's, I mean, obviously it's the whole point, but, like, I must have gone back and forth, like, 100 times between their two people and their one person. Like, every clip would change my mind, basically.
Or, Steve actually had another theory where it's just one person, but she's, like, making up. She's, like, lying about the fact that there's this other person to, like, basically get out of the situation and putting the blame on somebody else.
Or that it's, like, or, like, I guess the third thing is that, like, making up that there's a second person so that you can, plead mentally unstable or whatever.
I think this game asks, like, some really important questions about like the truth value in games, like what, like using the, like, how much does the footage, I guess, for you, like, to pose that as a question, how much did you find that the footage, like, of a person in a room added or detracted to, like, the believability of, like, what she's saying in her testimony, essentially.
Mm. Like, you're saying if it had just been the same game,
but like, pre-rendered or rendered by
computer graphics.
Not
yeah.
live action.
Like, would that have changed things? Because that's the thing that I go back and forth on.
I think so, 100%. I mean, like, don't get me wrong, after playing games my whole life, I'm, like, highly empathetic to not real people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do think it would have made it different. I don't know why. I can't express it, but
I think it comes down to that. I don't even think we're at the level yet of technology to, like, replicate an actress doing the things. Like the inflections in her voice, the movements she makes, like, the little facial, like, the facial structure. Like, yeah, we have mocap and all that, and you can, you know, L.A. Noire tried to do that, and it failed miserably and hilariously. and I think anything like that can instantly take you out. You know, as soon as something goes wrong or an eye twitches where it's not supposed to or whatever.
Well, and I mean, like, because that's, like, the one thing I really liked about Beyond Two Souls was, like, how well they did do all the capturing with Ellen Page and stuff like that, and, like, how well it was done. And so, like, you play that and you're like, oh, we're close. We're close to being able to do this. But still not quite there.
Yeah. Well, and, like, I think once you start getting into having a performer, though, you wind up with a sense of theatricality as well. Like, I think the way that she delivered, like, I think she's a phenomenal actress, but absolutely there were points where it was like, I was kind of going back and out of, like, believing her as a character and just, like, marveling at her abilities as an actress.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of, like, I think that's, like, I'm surprised that the reviews of this game were not more stratified, because I think it seemed to be a lot of, like, how much are people willing to believe in this actress? And, like, how much do you believe in this actress, and how much do you believe in this character, and how much, like, because a lot of the story comes across as very, like, fantastical or like, it's laying bare a lot of its mechanisms, I think, in a lot of cases. It's relying a little too heavily on some tropes. I think one of my biggest misgivings about the game is that it suggests, like, it kind of doubles down on the, like, crazy woman, like, femme fatale trope.
Yeah.
A little bit too much. Like, it's kind of suggested, like, one of the whole interpretations is based around whether you buy that aspect of the character.
Mm-hmm. And I think that goes back into the whole, like, white woman problems kind of, like, thing we were going with before, because at the end of the day, like, jilted lover and, like, you know, the man getting in between the two girls and all these other kind of suburbanite issues.
She kind of reminded me of the main character from Nymphomaniac.
Yes, that is so true. And she kind of looks like her a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, like, there was a lot of, like, really reminded me of that. I was like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't go that far, I guess, in certain ways. But
it's understandable that you haven't watched the 8-hour movie.
Is it 8 hours?
No,
it's like a two-parter.
It's like 5 hours. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, it would be a nice, like, supplement, I think, to you go to watch this movie now, thinking of her story. It would be interesting. But kind of back to the interpretation thing. Mm. So we had the article that we all read by
Laura Hudson,
and she went with the multiple personality disorder argument. And she went into, like, why it's a bad representation. That's why where we're getting it from. And she made some solid points. But she's been getting flack recently because people are asking her to apologize for interpreting the game wrong.
Ugh.
Because her interpretation was the basis for her review, she is therefore making invalid statements, and she's getting all this flack, and so what do we do with something like that, right? Like, obviously, internet will internet, but to make, like, say we wrote an essay, for example, on one interpretation, like, how much is that valued?
Mm-hmm.
For something that's neither proven or disproven.
I think it's just so weird, because, like, all of us being, like, having, you know, English degrees and English grad degrees, the idea of someone being, like, apologize for your interpretation is, like, the most ridiculous thing imaginable in, like, the context that we are in. Like, I mean, that's just, I guess, the problem with games in general right now, though, right? Is that, like, you're not allowed to have interpretations. There's this idea that there is, like, a, you know, objective thing that's happening. And games like this are really going to throw a wrench in that, because it's, like, they are more... Oh, I don't want to use the L word, but I want to be, like, they're more literary. even though I hate that. Like, so it's just, like, there are going to be a lot of interpretations, and we are going to have to treat it like a literary text, and you can't avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like when I was reading when I was playing the game. I was immediately like, again, I used to roll real deep in literary studies. I was very much interested. I mean, for a while, I was writing about like masculinity and like epic novels and like this like weird sort of colonial impulse to like write these long ass books that don't really tell a story, but they like start encapsulating as much knowledge as possible. It's almost like they like these guys. If the internet were around, they would be in the comments section telling you how wrong you were because of some thing they read in this Wikipedia, or they would have just written a Wikipedia themselves. And I kept going back to House of Leaves and like that distinction between like sort of the hard boiled noir, like kind of like ambiguous, not easy to resolve storylines to these meticulous like these are specific causal chains. That, like, if you look at Clue, Mr. Body is always dead. The murderer is always in the house. The motive is always money. The weapon is always in the house. Like, it's all very, like, you know what's going to happen at the end of it. It is very well resolved. Everything, like, wraps up in a nice little bow. And then society has been restored and you go on with your life. Whereas with, like, noir and hard-boiled stuff, it tended to be a little bit more hysterical at the end. It was just, like, more of, like, oh, God, everything's crumbling, and we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the way forward is, but at least we were able to, like, pay the bills for another month. And that and, like, House of Leaves, where you're, like, you're constantly chasing these weird little tendrils and stories down a rabbit hole that never resolves itself. Like, that book is literally falling apart in your hands. And is this constantly cut apart. Like, you're reading, like, footnotes that go for pages and an appendix that has a novella in it. Like, it's this weird kind of, you're just, you wind up, you're thrust in the middle of this thing, and your best bet is just to, like, attack it any which way you can and try to derive some meaning out of it. And I think that's what I really appreciate about her story, but at a certain point, like, I still don't have, like, and I like the fact that I don't have a solid, stable interpretation of it.
And I
think both are very interesting arguments for someone to make. Because at a certain point, it's like, what do you assign truth value to in this story?
Media people are willing to do that too. It's like, I don't think anyone's going to come out and be like, I know the one interpretation of House of Leaves.
Yeah.
No one's going to do that because it goes against the whole nature of why the book exists in the first place.
Yeah, it was built to be irresolvable. It was built by a graduate student who'd read Derrida and was like, okay, let's go.
Exactly, but like no one... But with games, people want to be like, no, I want to know. Yeah. I want to know what happened.
And I think maybe some of that, too, is that, like, it's more easy to conclude a book or even a movie, if you think about, like, Inception or something like that.
That's true with movies. Version. People are like that, too, yeah.
But at least you know, like, there is an end because the movie is over. But with this kind of game, there's nothing specifically telling you when to close the game. Yeah. Right? So you know, it's I think it's harder for people to wrap their brains around... You know, there doesn't have to be a ending or, like, three endings or, you know, whatever your decisions factor into this ending. It's just kind of like, no, it's just here. And, just play around with it. Like it's almost like a sandbox narrative is what you could possibly say it is. Well, you could spend as much time as you want, you know, minus, like, the whole creation element of a sandbox game. You have this thing, and here it is. And you shut it off when you want. It's like, there's no ending to Minecraft, you know? But people aren't being like...
There is an end game, I guess. There's a final boss.
Yeah.
Initially when Minecraft came out, they didn't have all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
So
And there's also no, like, narrative that people are expecting to be resolved.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting how certain things are picked on other more than others.
Well,
you know?
And I think that's one of those things that makes this... I really wish I had a word to use other than literary, because literary has so much, you know, hierarchical value to it and stuff, but, like, it's one of the only games that I can think of, or the types of games that there's certain books that I think, like, people will be like, oh, could it be adapted into a game? And sometimes you're like, oh, yeah, sure, and other times you're like, oh, never?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this, playing this game made me think, like, oh, you know, if I use this format, I can see the ways that, like, Pale Fire or Lolita could be interpreted, could be adapted into a game. And I was thinking about Lolita the whole time I was playing it, because I think there's, like, a lot of similarities there. And, like, it was just this whole other way of presenting information to you in a game that just, like, I just had never... I'd never seen before. Like, with House of Leaves, I think I always thought, like, oh, this could make a really sick game. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it could be a thing where you're, like, physically exploring a literal house.
Yeah.
It would be a very Silent Hill-esque experience. But mm-hmm. something like Pale Fire or Lolita, I was like, oh, never. But now that I've played this, I'm like, oh, maybe.
Yeah, I think, like, the using the House of Leaves, like, I could absolutely see that, where you're in Zampano's apartment, and mm-hmm. you're going through all this stuff, but, like, as you open up a new passage, it kind of goes into, like, a mini-game type thing. Or
yeah.
Not like a mini-game, but, like, a narrative.
Well, or even just think about how Silent Hill games work, where, yeah. like, you know, you're here, and then you're there, and then you're back, and then you're like, was I even there? You yeah. know, like, yeah.
I think it's kind of telling that this guy also worked on Silent Hill Shattered Memories.
Oh, well. Yeah, totally.
And actually, like, on that note, because we're talking about it, like, did you guys also get, like, a bit of a horror vibe from this?
Absolutely.
Yes. Like, I think, like, I was talking to you guys about this before, but the music mm-hmm. at yeah. some parts, and then when the screen would flash to reflect your face, I think that's what it was doing, yeah. but yeah. I didn't pick up on that. I thought, like, the computer was possessed by the sister.
Oh.
The sister's ghost, because it takes a while to figure out what the face looks like.
It's another way that it's similar to Gone Home, right? Where at first it does all these tropes to make you think it's, like, there's something happening with a ghost, and then, like, slowly you're like, oh, no, it's just me.
And I don't know if it was just timing or it was purposely doing this, but when I started going into the line of questioning about her mother mm-hmm. and the nanny, I think it was, that the music started to really change, and I kind mm-hmm. of got this cue that, you know, it's not about the murder, like, it's about the life of this woman, and yeah. this is, like, the important stuff that I should be taking away from it. But it may have been timing, because I don't know how the music keys into the mm-hmm. narrative, or it's just, like, cycles through.
I think it is, he said in the podcast that certain clips have music so that, you know, they're more yeah. important, I guess.
Yeah,
oh,
so
okay.
if you see it like a more, like, a really, like, it sounds like it builds on it, though. If you're watching, like, a succession of very heavy clips,
right.
the music will get more and more and more intense or insistent that, you know, something important's going on here. Which is interesting that it's, like, non-diegetic music is intruding on something that is so meticulously constructed to be this sort of, like, embodied.
Hyper-realistic,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and, like, I think the interesting thing to think about it as a horror game is, like, even once you know it's not a ghost or whatever, like, it's still kind of a horror game, because, like, I was trying to think about it on the way over here. I was like, what's more horrifying? That someone is suffering with delusions of such grandeur, or that someone literally lived in their literal attic.
Right.
Like, hiding for all that time. Like, I mean, I think the second one's more horrifying.
Yeah.
But, like, just actually trying to... It's really easy to be like, oh, they're just the same person, so it's not that scary. But to think about the second thing, it's like... I don't know, you know... this is so cheesy, but, like, you know that Simpsons episode where there's two Barts?
Yeah. Yes.
I couldn't help but thinking about that. I'm like, oh, it's bored up there.
Yeah. Well, it's literally invoking the woman in the attic trope.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The crazy monster that's literally in the attic.
And just, like, the clip about the hairbrush, I was just like, well, that's one of the most horrifying things I've ever consumed in media.
Right, yep. Yes. And even, like, the idea of, like, the wig was such a big thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I thought this, but I thought of Leatherface, like, sort of from that, and I know there's no, like, it's so way off there, but I'm thinking just the idea of, like, assuming the identity of someone else, but it yeah. looks off,
because yeah.
that's the whole thing with Leatherface, right? Like,
yeah.
he kind of puts on the skin, but it doesn't quite fit, and so it looks really disturbing, because you're kind of facing this person that they're not,
yeah.
Well,
and to have, like, them, I could just picture, like, a murderer like that, right? Like, it's freaky.
And if there is two people, I'm gonna, like, have, like, a super, like, misandry moment here. But, like, I didn't think about it until I was reading the reviews, and one of the reviews of the game, like, on Steam, one of the first one was, like, trigger warning for rape scenes, and I was like, oh, do they mean the hairbrush? And then I realized, like, no, they mean the husband. And, like, that just, I feel totally bad about it, but it just didn't occur to me until I read that review, where I was like, holy shit, there is two of them, that is rape.
See, and I don't know, even know what you're talking about, actually, because I must have missed that.
Like, if there's two of them, and he thinks he's having sex with one of them, but he's actually having
right.
sex with
yes,
the
yes,
other.
Oh, right, yes, yes, yes.
Like,
yeah.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, that is really messed up. Especially,
like,
when they're trying to have kids.
Yeah.
Two
yeah,
out of
that. Exactly.
Right,
like,
yes.
He's consenting to having sex with this woman, but this woman who he thinks is his wife, but is actually not his wife?
Yeah.
Like, and I feel really bad that I had to read a review on Steam before I was like, holy shit, that's rape. Yeah, so, like, just, like, another, like, aspect of, like, the, like, making it just, like, a horrifying experience to when you're really thinking about it.
Yeah.
You don't even have to be playing it. It's not like someone's jumping out at you. You're just in the shower the next day being like, oh, God. Oh, no.
Well, I feel like also, you know, like, Eugene Thacker has written 3 books now on, like, the horror of philosophy, and that, like, philosophy in and of itself is, like, horrific in that it is, like, constantly confronting sort of, like, the horizon of what we can understand or know. And I think when you have stuff like this where it's, like, yes, we have, like, there's also, like, some visual cues that kind of tune us into that, like, to kind of make us receptive of the horror of the game. But there's also just, like, the fact that the story doesn't resolve itself at all, and you have these elements of, like, this person who may or may not be two people, and, like, the idea of, like, personality slippages, where you're not necessarily in full control of your ability to, like, exist in the world. And then also, like, as a player who is used to, like, that's a common thing in horror games, where you just don't really know what's going on or what's going to happen, and that goes in stark contrast to any other game where everything is so clearly signposted, what you're supposed to do next, where you're supposed to go next. And this game kind of, like, it primes you with just the first, like, murder search term. But when I was going into it, I was like, is there a murder going on here?
Yeah.
Is this actually what happened? Like, and because there's no corroborating evidence outside of this testimony, like, there's nothing. You can make the argument that it's just, she just happened to come into this, like, the police station over and over and over again and, like, talk about this stuff, and not necessarily, like, the detectives are just sitting there going, like, there's no murder, what are you talking about?
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, because she enters it reporting that her husband's dead.
Yeah.
So, and then later she becomes, like, the main suspect. Mm. So, to even keep track of who is who was kind of interesting, because I was looking at, like, her hair, because her hair is down and then it's up, and then sometimes she's, like, more frazzled than at other points. Like, there's particular ones, I think, where she's wearing, like, the blue shirt at the end, where they get particularly aggressive with her, and she gets particularly aggressive back. She's like standing up. She stands up at one point, I think, leaves, actually.
Yeah. Well, and then you're, like, trying to track what they take in their coffee, but then in the end, like, I couldn't, like,
help me at all. Yeah,
one where it...
Like, I feel like that was a red herring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was beautiful, too. Like, the fact that it was the last video that I got to, where I was just like, oh, okay, never mind. Like, I thought I had this pegged, I had both characters. Because, like, you know, for me, it was tracking what they were wearing and, like, the tattoo. The presence or absence of a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a matter of, okay, assuming that this tattoo is a real tattoo and all that other stuff, then it's a matter of, okay, the ones that are, the tattoo would be potentially covered, what are they talking about? What are they drinking?
Yeah.
And, like, kind of trying to nail that down. And I was glad that didn't easily resolve itself. But presumably, like, the last video where she's wearing the white shirt, it seems to have pretty much just, like, everything seems to have kind of opened up. She's, like, kind of being very frank with them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that's Eve, right? Or
I think so.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
But, like, I love how we're still unsure, and that's what's great.
Who knows?
Speaking of red herrings, too, like, the other thing that is, that made me think of that is that I spent, like, and I told you guys about this at length, and I tried to find my notes and I couldn't, but I spent at least 2 hours before the internet was like, oh, this is what the tap code is.
Yeah.
Like, reading about the history of the tap code, and then, like, recording taps, and then, like, unjumbling words and rejumbling words, and I spent, like, 2 hours trying to do that, and, like, even once the internet was like, oh, this is what she's saying, I was like, I tried to do it, and I couldn't get that. So, like, I don't know if I was fucking something up or whatever, but, like, I was so convinced that it would be the search term that ended the game.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I was just convinced that obviously this is what's happening, which might be because we just played PT. And I feel like if this game was PT, that would have been what it was.
Jareth.
Yeah, Jareth. and then, like, when the internet was like, oh, it's this, I was like, fuck!
Yeah.
I wanted it to not be that. I wanted it to be something much, much more interesting.
Well, like, even then, like, by Hannah, I'm not quite sure, like, how to read that.
Yeah, it's just like,
yeah.
Well, what does that give you? Maybe there's something profound there that I'm missing.
I thought that, like, is she referring? Like, for a while, I was convinced that the person at the screen was Hannah.
Yeah, me too.
Because there's her face that kept showing up. So I thought it was like, there was no murder. Hannah just disappeared. Eve was in police custody, but like at a certain point, I assume Simon was murdered because like she says as much.
Yeah.
Presumably Simon was murdered. Like I'm not gonna take the radical view of like nothing happened.
Yeah. Well, and then the police were there and they investigated.
Yeah. Police committed a fair bit of resources to this. That suggests enough to me that there's like something going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that was my read until I got to the end. And even then, it was like, do you know what your mother did? Was like the second chat prompt. Or do you understand why she did what she did?
Right.
And I was like, no, I don't. I don't understand why she did what she did.
Yeah.
Curse you, Sam Barlow. Another sleepless night for me.
Yeah, for real.
Back to the memo app on my iPod. I don't know. I wish there were more things like the tap code. Not necessarily like more of the tap code.
Yeah, no, but more things like that. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. That was because that was one of the things that was like
I felt like a god, even if I had the wrong answer.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's the thing, is like I've like recently become sort of obsessed with the whole escape room thing. And I think that's partially why, is because like when you're a gamer and you're playing all these games all the time and you like solve these puzzles, and sometimes you're just like, yeah, whatever, next puzzle. And sometimes you're like, oh, I'm a golden god. But for the most part, it's like, I feel like I don't get as much satisfaction out of it as I used to. And part of the reason why I started doing all the escape rooms is because the puzzles are so fucking hard and so real, like tactile like that, that when you do figure them out, you do feel like you're just like, I'm the most brilliant soul who's ever walked the earth.
It's less of like going through the motions and more of just like, again, that idea that's like, here's the tools you need to solve now. You have to work with them.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, I guess so many games are designed around, like, do a thing, get to the end of the path, kill the guys along the way, and here's a cutscene as your reward. And then you're just like, yeah, but everybody's doing this because it's, like, so on rails or so, you know, formulaic that you're like, I don't feel...
Well, and
like
it's
I'm accomplishing.
Unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Like, not to return to the satisfied thing, but, like... I mean, like, I think about the difference between, like, playing Resident Evil 1 and Resident Evil 5.
Mm.
And, like, you know, by the time you're playing Resident Evil 5, you're just playing a fucking shooter, and there's no puzzles, and there's nothing to figure out, and it's just, you're shooting people, and there's cutscenes, you're shooting more people, more fucking cutscenes. But, like, when you're playing, like, the first three Resident Evil games, like, some of those puzzles were fucking hard. And when you figured them out, especially if you weren't using the internet, or, you know, like, it was, like... Like, you really, really felt like you'd accomplished something.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, I don't know if that's just the internet age we live in, where, like, people don't think they can make these games anymore because the answers will be posted.
Mm-hmm.
But, I was even talking to my younger cousin, he's 11, and we gave him a bunch of old games, and he likes Zelda, so I was like, play Ocarina of Time, and I'm like, you know, a few months later, as of yesterday, you know, I asked him, like, how far are you in Ocarina of Time, and he's like, oh, I'm still stuck in Kukiri Village. And I'm like, that's the first, like, you know, 5 minutes of the game, how are you stuck? And he's like, it's really hard. And I was just like, maybe it is for a child when you don't have the access to the internet or know what to look up. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with
it. I don't know, though, because I'm like, man, when I played that game, I was like 10, 11. Like, we played it without the internet.
And yeah. Like, mm-hmm. And so I told them.
But maybe it's like that instinct.
Thing, yeah, that instinct to not want to explore. And or maybe, like, People these days.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, maybe
kids
like
these days.
Kids these days, like, they don't know how to solve the question, like solve the questions, right? Like they know they have to find the sword or whatever they tell the shield, and they just have no idea where to look because there's no arrows on the screen pointing them, or there's no NPC that's like, walk up this hill now. Oh, and then go this way.
And it's just interesting because, like, you know, if you think about like different types of gamers, like I feel like I'm the type of gamer where like I want as much constraint on me as possible, and not necessarily difficulty, but constraint. Whereas like the, you know, like if Minecraft is the game that's super, super popular with kids right now, you know, there couldn't be less constraint on you. There's parts about it that are still difficult and hidden, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're still finding things and discovering things, and it's awesome. But the constraint is low.
Well, yeah, but I think that opens the door for, like, voluntary constraints. Like,
yes.
Like, I'm, you know, I want to build this machine in, like, with redstone or whatever, and, like, I think it's a lot more self-directed in that regard. And, you know, like, coming up with roguelikes and stuff like that when I was a kid, you know, there were people who just got good enough at beating NetHack that they were like, all right, I'm going to go through and I'm just not going to read anything. And it was like, at the time, like, it was not necessarily keeping track of that stuff. I think later iterations eventually did start keeping track of, like, oh, you were illiterate, or you were vegan. And it would keep track of, like, the types of food you would eat. And it's just, like, it added an extra wrinkle of difficulty, but it also meant that you, like, had a greater sense of ownership of what you were doing in it. I think that's what I like about her story, is that it's far more collaborative in terms of the story. Mm-hmm. You are, like, you have to construct this yourself. You can't just sit there and, like, wait for the watching. Like, and that's the part that I found hope. It's just killing me about, like, the negative responses to this game. They're like, you're just watching this movie. And it's like, okay, now tell me what happened in the movie. And they're like, it was a bad story.
It's like, because
if you're not putting in the work to, like, construct that narrative or, like, make the case for your interpretation of it, then it's not going to have a lot of meaning for you. And that doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. It just means that, you know, like, this is probably not for you.
Right.
Which most gamers are not used to.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it just makes you...
Yeah, that's true.
It makes you wonder, like, how far is this really off from, like, something like Metal Gear, right? Mm-hmm. Where the cutscenes are, like, half an hour long at some times. Or even, like, other JRPGs where I've played, you know, Xenosaga, the cutscene is an hour long.
Yeah.
And so... And yet, for some reason, no one likes to put that in the vein of, like, casual or something, because you happen to be shooting a gun instead of typing, typing in words and thinking, you know, like, in that way.
Yeah. Well, it's also requiring an incredible amount of time from you.
Yeah, exactly. So. And there's been times I've had to shut off the game and be like, well, because I have to leave now and I wasn't expecting to sit here for an hour, you know.
I just want to mention, like, there's a game that came out last week, I guess, TIS 100 from Zachtronics. So the guys did Space Chem. Maybe, I think it might be just one person. And they put out a game called TIS Net or TIS 100, which is essentially like an assembly programming game. So you're just programming stuff, and like I still haven't really figured out what I'm supposed to do with it. But one part is you have to read a manual, and in the manual they've got it reminded me a lot of her story, actually, because it was. There's a story there in the manual. Like, there's a post-it note. There's a post-it note from your aunt, and like, this is a computer that you got from your uncle who died. And like, at a certain point, you're just trying to get it working. You're trying to figure it out, and so you're reading through the manual, and it's got like notes and stuff is highlighted and stuff is written on, and it kind of like it harkened back a bit to like the adventure game, like the Infocom stuff where you had feelies and stuff. Like Deadline is like a classic detective style game with like a general resolution to the storyline. But it had, like, case files you had to read up on before you went to the crime scene. Mm. Which was, like, very much putting you in the mindset of, like, you are police. You have to prepare yourself. You have to do your homework. And otherwise, like, the game just doesn't make any sense when you show up at the house and start talking to people. And people don't want, like, they don't have time for your, like, if you're just sitting there asking them a bunch of dumb questions, they're going to, like, leave the room. And they're going to ignore you, which is, like, an interesting kind of approach. But, yeah, the TIS 100... I don't know. I'm probably going to eventually just, like, look up the solutions because I want to get at the story, but I think it's an interesting approach that they're framing it in that way. So, yeah. But yeah, we've run for a while now.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Does anyone have any, like...
Final thoughts?
Yeah, we're almost at an hour, so...
Yeah. I think there's still lots to talk about with this game, right? I mean, each clip kind of has their own, like, little conversation, I think, that we could have. But I think there needs to be more games like this. And, like, when you said, like, some things can't be turned into a game, well, I don't think you should always make that so cut and dry when you're not trying to reinvent genres and mechanics.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like, I'm sure everything could be turned into a game if we think hard enough about what can be a game, and if we're open enough about what can be a game, right?
Exactly,
yeah.
Yeah, I, like, you know, the refrain that I've heard so far has been, you know, this is probably not going to start the Google search genre of games, where you're presented with a database and you're searching your way through it. I like that it's kind of a serious full motion video, like, FMV game, because I've only ever seen that stuff played for camp.
Like the 3DO games, like, yeah. Yeah, or like the Sega CD.
The recent release, Contradiction, Spot the Liar, which is like, Giant Bomb has a bunch of videos of them playing. Like, they wound up just playing through the game. So if you want to see Austin Walker laugh at a lot of, like, just really goofy, like, very British, like, whodunit style game. That's a real interesting game to take a look at, especially coming out like on the heels of Her Story as like another crime game where there's people just, you just got a bunch of actors together and like these are photos that you're clicking on. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see that stuff come back in a different way, and it's interesting to see games that come out that evoke the idea that you're like actually investigating something instead of like, oh, this is the thing where you twiddle the thumbsticks on the controller between, you know, beating some guy's face in.
Right.
Like, I'd love to see more of those like speculative or like investigative games that, especially like given the way that, you know, the like the current controversies about the police, I think there would be an interesting game there where it's specifically speaking to like proper police procedural and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, and I think even just taking it out of the crime context, it made me think a lot about how immersion works and how a lot of what we assume about immersion is this idea about like VR and like, you know, having all the lights off and how good are your graphics and that sort of thing.
Surround sound
and like, and all these sorts of things. And it's just like, I'm sort of coming to this conclusion recently that it's just like, man, like none of that stuff is what immerses me anymore. Like I really think that this game was one of the most immersive games I've played in a really long time. Mm-hmm. And like, if I think about the last couple of years, like this, Gone Home, The Walking Dead are probably, like, sadly, the most immersive games I've played, where, like, I was really there and not thinking about anything else. In the same way you get lost in, like, a book.
Yeah.
Where it's not about, like, it's not realistic, but it's just, like, you just kind of, like, almost out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
And maybe that's just, those are the games that where effort is being put to the writing, and it's not on the back burner.
Yeah.
Well, and, like, also our places in our lives, right? Like, you know, I had endless hours to go and goof around in a strategy game or an RPG game that would just take like an entire afternoon. I don't now. Like I got a job. I got other stuff to do. So the fact that I could get in a few clips here and there over lunch, or I could like go and, you know, like stay up an extra half an hour after my partner's gone to bed and just kind of like chill out and do this before I go to sleep and like wind up dreaming about this game when I've gone to sleep. But it resolves itself in about 9 hours. Like, I think I probably was on the outside of the amount of time I spent with this game compared to most people. And that, I didn't even break the 10-hour point, but it was $5. It told me, like, it had me super engaged for the amount of time that it had me for, and I would love to see more stuff like short experiences and stuff like that. At a certain point, like, I love all that stuff and I will go and play like the next big game or whatever, but this thing speaks a lot more to me, I think, in terms of like, I don't have the attention span. So,
well, I think we'll wrap it up here, but thank you for listening if you listened. And
because who's hearing you say that isn't listening.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know about you guys. I download a podcast and I fast forward immediately to the end. I need to know who did it.
Yes.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
First Person Scholar.
Submit.
Submit.